this summer at a random barbecue, I met a woman who worked for a big podcast like the New York Times or This American Life or something similar. And of course, I told her that I also was in the podcast business and I interviewed World Cup skiers. She said, no, no, no. The way you're going to balloon into the mainstream media is with big issues like widespread workplace mistreatment or systematic cheating or something of that sort. She was convinced I could find something to really blow up in ski racing if I looked hard enough. Ultimately, I decided that I was perfectly fine not going mainstream. I pride myself on having balanced conversations. The interview you're going to hear today is not a complete takedown of the American ski racing system, the U.S. ski team, or American university ski teams, or whatever. It's simply a balanced expedition into an issue that I'm sure many of you would like to know more about. And we are back. I'm Jimmy Krupka, and welcome to Arc City. Arc City is presented by Ski Racing Media, and this episode is sponsored by On Location. Also, a shout out to Sync Performance and the World Cup Dreams Foundation for supporting me this season. I interviewed three guests for the podcast today, all at the same time, and I'll give them each a quick intro. Edie Morgan has got a World Cup podium from her time racing Super G and downhill in the 80s and 90s, and she also wrote a book called Shut Up and Ski, and she churns out consistently what I think is some of the best American ski journalism, mostly published on skiracing.com. Pete Dodge is a former U.S. ski teamer who was also pretty successful, very successful, on the World Pro Ski Tour in the 80s. He recently retired as head coach of the Dartmouth ski team after 33 years at the helm. He actually coached me for a year. He's now enjoying retired life, but still helps out at some races. And Aldo Radamus was the U.S. women's head tech coach in the 80s, the men's head tech coach in the 90s. Then he was U.S. development director for a few years, then director of Ski and Snowboard Club Vail for a few years, and still can't get enough. He's running Team Summit Colorado, which is doing some really cool stuff these days in terms of keeping costs low and quality high. Needless to say, these three have spent a lot of time both experiencing and thinking about the development of our young racers in the U.S. So without further ado, except to mention that this interview with them was recorded 2 months ago, so at the end you'll find that I tagged on a little update with them as well. Okay, let's do this. Edie Morgan, Pete Dodge, and Aldo Radamus, welcome to Arc City.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you guys. I know you were all going to talk at once on that, but that's okay. It's great to have all three of you here. Let's dive right into it. Edie, I want to contextualize this conversation for the listeners. I want to make sure we know what we're talking about. It's college ski racing, but there's finer topics and details we're going to get into. And I just thought you could give us a nice overlay of what the situation is in American ski racing and the NCAA right now.
Sure. I think, college ski racing has sort of ebbed and flowed in its relevance in the greater picture. You know, and certainly in the 60s, it was harder to make the CU ski team than the US ski team. Then it went out. Pete's going to get into the little history. He's better at that than
I am. Sorry, I just want to pause you for a second. It was harder to make the CU ski team than the US ski team in the 60s.
Yeah. Yes, because there was, you know, Jimmy Huga, Spider Savage, Moose Barrows. I mean, it basically was the de facto U.S. ski team with Bob Biatti coaching it. But so it was super relevant then. And then for various reasons, mostly because college races weren't FIS for a long time, it went out. And there were more robust national teams, so it wasn't needed as a development tool. So it sort of went out. And then it started coming back, you know, when college races became FIS, basically, started attracting, again, you know, the top racers, domestic and internationally. And that's a big topic we're going to talk about, is the number of international students taking advantage of our system because the NCAA is a uniquely American resource. I think it got, you know, last year at the World Championships, it was just in everyone's face because there were, let's see, 18 athletes from eight different schools competing at the World Championships.
Wow. There,
Laurence Saint-Germain, who raced for all 4 years for UVM, won the slalom gold. AJ Guinness, who had raced for Dartmouth, won slalom silver. More athletes that were NCAA racers picked up medals in the team event. So, it, you know, the proof of concept was totally there. And it's been, you know, it's been coming for some time. I think the other issue that people think about a lot is how, you know, the Canadians, the Norwegians, other countries have kind of, you know, optimized the NCAA system for development faster than the U.S. has. That is, I think that's changing. Actually, there were, so in the 2021, if you look at sort of the NCAA championships, which is the 34 top skiers on the college circuit in the country, and that's 17 from the West, 17 from the East, there were eight in 2021, there were 10 in 2022. So it is, you know, it's building. You know, one of those was a national team athlete who was also racing on the college circuit. So you're starting to see that shift in the U.S. as well, really driven from the kids who are like, I want to have the college experience when I am a college age.
Totally.
And they're seeing people that are doing it all and they want to do that too. So they're kind of driving this. You know, it's not like the national team, because it's a pain for the national teams. I mean, even the ones that sort of allow it and bless it, it's more work to coordinate, but it's also free development for their kids. So I think they're taking good advantage of it. So I guess that's a bit of a sketch. I can go into it more.
That's perfect. That's a good sketch. And this is a fun topic. I mean, I guess I should tell the listeners that I raced in college. I've raced for the U.S. ski team, and I did kind of a mixture sort of thing. I'm trying to stay objective. I'm trying to just have a good conversation with you three and explore this issue because I am a journalist. But, you know, I am a fan of skiing in college when done correctly. I'll say that. So, Pete, I'm curious about the history briefly before we get into what's currently happening.
Yeah, sure. I think, Edie did a great job. If you read her article, I think it's Degrees of Success in Skiing History, great summary. But way back in, you know, around the time of the first Olympics, what was that, in the 30s and 40s, the U.S. team was selected by going to DU and CU and Middlebury and Dartmouth and inviting the guys for a tryout. There was no U.S. ski team or Olympic team. So for a long time, as Edie pointed out, even in the 60s, there wasn't a strong U.S. ski team. So college was where they rounded up their athletes for the circuit. Then it kind of fell to the wayside as college skiing, you know, got a little more organized, but they were just running USSA level races and they weren't connected to the FIS point system. So it really became difficult to go to college and compete and not get FIS points. Then in the early 90s, I think, and I have to credit George Brooks, I think, from the longtime coach at New Mexico, with bringing FIS University racing, which is a classification that FIS has for specifically for university students, into the Rocky Mountain circuit. And then a couple of years later, we had the first FIS Uni race in the East and quickly moved to creating our whole circuit as FIS points. So that enabled skiers to go to college to maintain relevance, maintain their rankings. We were soon consistently producing minimum penalties equal or better than NORAMs just in college racing. So skiers were active, and college programs have continued to pick up their game with excellent coaching, athletic support, training support, gyms, and all that. So now we're at a point where, as Edie pointed out, you know, there are 18 people winning medals in the World Championships who were either graduated from college, skied in college, and actually many more who haven't skied in college but are taking courses. So I think, and just, you know, a little story, you know, you've all heard about Lucas Broughton, and it kind of brings, without reading too much into his mind, it's I've seen a lot of skiers like him over the years just get burned out and go like, I don't have a life. I don't know what I'm doing. I've been doing this since I was 16. And how can I do this till I'm 30? And a lot of them, like, you know, like Laurent Saint-Germain, Andrew Weibrecht, you know, came back to school and found new meaning, new life, new energy, and their careers exploded just by, you know, getting into life. And that's the facts of life in the U.S. is that, you know, college and education and society in Europe, you know, for a lot of them, you know, they can get off the farm or out of the Gasthof and go be a ski racer. And it's a great thing. But in the U.S., you need, you know, the culture and the socialization and your friends and high school and college events. And so I think that's really important.
Yeah, I mean, and we can get into that. It's a great point that you bring up. You know, for those who don't know, Lucas Broughton recently retired. I think he's 22, 21, just won a slalom globe. It was kind of a shock to everybody. It's interesting that you bring him up because before he broke onto the World Cup, I think when he was getting his first World Cup starts, he was telling me, he was telling somebody else, hey, if this World Cup thing doesn't work out, or even if it does, I'm thinking I might just go to college and ski for college. And we were all trying to convince him to go ski in the US and ski that. College. And it was fun. And it's a nice, thought and look at the way he thinks about things. And that skiing wasn't just about results, but it was about having fun. It was about being part of a team. I actually wonder if he'll try to ski in college. I think that'd be really fun.
the recruiters will be out there.
Yeah.
I was just at the UNR, Nevada, Reno just had resurrected their NCAA team and they had a ski ball out there, but everyone was saying, yeah, we're looking at maybe Lucas.
Yeah. Why not? That'd be funny.
Edie, there was something that you said that, that I think bears worth repeating, that in the 60s, it was more difficult to make the CU ski team and was a national team. And I think that could also be said today at certain levels and at certain schools where the standard that one has to meet to be part of the varsity roster at some of our strongest NCAA schools may actually be higher than what it takes to make the step into the D team or even C team in some cases. And then I think what's really important just to emphasize is that the real driver, in my view, of what's made colleges, raise the level in the colleges, and both Edie and Peter mentioned it, was the introduction of FISUs into the system. And I think initially that has been more attractive for internationals as compared to our U.S. skiers that have been taking advantage of it. And that's been one of the drivers of the shift in percentage of internationals that are attending our schools and taking those roster spots. As compared to where it was previous to that. I mean, there were always international skiers that came to colleges, even when the system was such that they couldn't maintain their FIS point profiles. But ever since the FISUs were introduced, that has only grown. And it has been the significant, or maybe the most significant driver of the number of internationals that are populating our college rosters.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Aldo. I had a teammate on the D team same year as me, made the D team, and you remember Jack Keane, Pete, he went to the Dartmouth team the following year and he didn't even make the roster. It was a 12-man roster and he didn't make the roster just because the Dartmouth team was so stacked that year. So it does show the level of college skiing in the U.S. And let's dig into the international thing. I like that you brought this up, Aldo, because there are some people who view the fact that we have a lot of international student racers in the U.S. as a kind of, you know, they're taking our jobs sort of thing. But, you know, it's also raised the level of competition. So when college races became FIS-sanctioned races and it became an attractive place for people around the world to come ski and develop, all of these really fast European racers have raised the level. And I don't know if any three of you have thoughts on this specifically.
I think That's true. I mean, it's a bit of a contentious argument. I mean, a lot of people, you know, get a little protectionist, and but there aren't very many spots. If you look at some of the programs, like, you know, particularly say DU, they may only carry 5 or 6 guys, sometimes even 4. So if they're recruiting one skier a year, there's one spot available. And, you know, frankly, a lot of the programs, especially the big time programs, it's about winning. If the coach doesn't win the football, you know, in football, he gets replaced. So they're told to win. So they're going to go out and recruit the best athletes they can. And you can't really blame them. So they're looking for the best skiers, and it's 1 or 2 a year. So it's very tough, and not just in skiing, but in all sports. At the top D1 level, it's really tough, and you got to be really good to make it there. So, yeah, I think there are. I mean, it is disconcerting. You look at the NCAA championships, and, you know, 8 out of the top 10 are foreigners, and the first All American, you know, is a 10th place finisher or something. So, it would be nice to see a balance. And I think one of the issues, this age change proposal, skiing has an exception that allows skiers to ski older. It's a little complicated in all the rules, but basically allows older people to take several PG years and come
as opposed
in
old. As opposed to other NCAA sports, yeah. Where like basically a year after you graduate high school, the clock starts ticking.
Yeah, you have
in
1 year.
And the clock doesn't start ticking till age 21 if you don't start school, start college at that point.
Yeah, so you can end up with 2 or even 3 years of PG and still get your 4 years of eligibility. So I think that would have that would help. It's not a magic bullet, but it would help. But I think more importantly, the idea of going to college right away is it's socialization. It's you're following the educational path. You're following a socialization path, a maturity path that is what your peers are doing. You know, it's a little tough to go to a lot of colleges as a 23-year-old freshman.
I've done it.
You know, and academically, you haven't been studying for 4 years. It's a little tough to catch up. So I think that's part of the solution. The other part is, like I said, it's just tough to make the teams, and you got to be pretty good. And it's like making the U.S. ski team. It's not easy, and everyone wants to make it, but it's a lot of guys and women out there, you know, competing for a couple spots. So
yeah, it's
I
not easy.
Add
yeah,
one thing
Edie, go.
Well, just when you're looking at the age, like realistically, the age you have to be competitive on the NCAA. So to make the championships, you have to be one of the top 17 in the West or top 17 in the East. I'm just looking at last year, the bulk of, so there were 9 21-year-olds, there were 9 22-year-olds, 8 23-year-olds, 2 24-year-olds, 5 25-year-olds. So there was 1 20-year-old. So you're not going to have 18 and 19 and even 20-year-olds really competitive on that circuit. So even if you are going straight to school and you're top shelf, it's still going to take you a couple years to really be super competitive and like trying to win on the circuit. So that's just to give you an idea of like realistic, if you're telling everyone go right away at 18, well, you can go right away at 18, but it might take you a few years before you're a factor on the tour.
Gotcha. And so this,
and potentially that's a way that you know, the elimination of that exemption that ski racing has might help solve that, right? Because it might eliminate some of those older athletes who are taking up those spots, whether it's at the championships or on those college rosters. And, you know, over the years, and I don't know how serious the conversations have been, but, you know, heard that there's been conversations about, well, what maybe we in NCAA skiing limit the number of internationals that can be part of a team. I think there are some sports that have rules along in that way. But I think that's not a particularly good solution for all of the things that, you know, that you described, the pressure on the colleges to, you know, to fill their rosters with athletes who are going to help them win the titles and so on. But eliminating that exemption has the potential to help balance those rosters a little bit more between American athletes taking those spots in what Edie or Peter might have described as a uniquely American resource, could happen organically with with consideration of that exemption.
Yeah, I think an interesting point is, you know, how many freshmen, you know, that get recruited for Division I football start. You know, many of them, they have to wait until their senior year before they're the starting quarterback. And I think the nice thing about college is you get a kid for 4 or even 5 years, and he's yours for, or she, he or she is yours for 4 or 5 years, and you can make a really thoughtful development plan. We're gonna take our time and develop you and educate you and teach you, you know. Whereas, you know, even on the U.S. ski team, a lot of times it's like you just made the D team, and if you don't make the C team next year, where the coach isn't doing his job or you haven't done your job. So I think it really gives kids, you've got 4 years to develop. No hurry. Take your time. Learn your lessons. And when you're a senior, you'll go to NCAAs and you'll win a title for us. You know, so I think that's real important factor.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's the way I felt when I went to college. I got cut from the D team after 2 years, and I had sort of resources from the US team that I was able to use during the summer, but I was fully skiing for Dartmouth. And it was such a wonderful feeling of, this is where I'm going to be for the next 4 years. I can chill out. I have a team. I have the same coach for 4 years, and I can just focus on developing, and I can focus on skyrocketing out of my fourth year at school. Suddenly, that mindset for me made me make the US ski team immediately, and then I was just back in 1 year. But that comfort and that just 4 year plan was really nice. So you all mentioned this rule change. So let's talk about it a little bit. There's a proposal, or maybe not even a proposal, but just talk of basically making it so that all FIS races would be under 25, all FIS uni races would be under 25, and trying to get kids to go to school 1 or 2 years after high school, as opposed to like 2, 3, 4, right?
Just to clarify, there is the FIS uni eligibility rule for to be qualified as a student is U25. However, there are some loopholes around that to enable someone who's 26 or even Division III now, you can be almost any age. So each country in FIS has a quota, and 4 of their entries, if they so decide to use them, can be for non-students. So you can actually enter a college student, like say Norway could enter them as one of the 4 non-students and get around the U25 qualification. A little complicated, but there's a little loophole there. But generally the FIS is U25, and the proposals out there are various to change the college rule, basically eliminate the exception, which is, in the simplest form, you have 1 year after graduation, then you start clicking off a year. And that would bring the age down to like 23, maybe 24 with some exceptions. And you know, so you could do 1 PG year and still get your 4 years, but.
Gotcha. Okay. And Edie, how would you see this? Or yeah, you go.
Well, I just want to add one complication of it being termed that way, is it's 1 year from high school graduation, your clock starts. Well, the Europeans graduate 1 or even 2 years from high school after we do. So you would still end up with a lot of older Europeans. So it's just, it's not as simple. I like the idea of simplifying it to just, you know, U25 and something that everyone could understand.
Oh, yeah, wait. So to clarify, Edie, if the rule was basing eligibility off of high school graduation year, then the Europeans who graduate when they're 19 or 20 could stay longer. So we need to make it a rule that's kind of gives a hard limit.
For it to be fair and universal, yes, it would be similar.
Yeah, I made a proposal several years ago to the ski committee, and it really didn't carry through because we didn't have strong support from U.S. Ski, and we felt we needed someone to really stand behind it. The colleges were, I think it could have passed, but But the proposal was just to, let's just come up with a FIS age, call it U24. And that way it aligns with FIS. Everyone understands what U24 is. It's not dependent on your birthday or the day you graduate from high school. It's simply U24, U25, something like that. So I think there's maybe some bureaucratic and convoluted NCAA rules that make that difficult. But I think that would be the easiest solution. Just U24. That's it.
Gotcha. Okay.
One more thing related to this. I think to make it for, you know, if US Ski and Snowboard has indicated some interest in getting behind this rule change, and from the college coach's point of view, if this is as a way to better utilize the college system for US athletes, on the other side, that if they're going to say, okay, we're going to take, you know, have that upper age limit and only and take younger athletes, well, then they're going to want the national team to then be, instead of taking on super young D team athletes, suggest as the normal course of development to go to college and to use the NCAA. So, because they still want to get the fastest athletes in the country. So the college coaches are thinking, if we're going to have access to the actual fastest athletes in the country, great. But if they're going to be advised to go to the national team very young instead of going to college, that's not going to work for the college coaches. So that's where there's sort of some give and take needs to happen, I think.
Yeah, I think okay. The key is it's got to be a cooperative system. And in the past, the ski team has fluctuated from kind of being antagonistic to college to being in a position of, okay, you can go to college, we'll let you do that. But they need to be supporting the colleges to make it work together. You know, they could name someone to the D team at 17 and say, okay, we want you to go to college, but we're going to provide you with equipment and training and Christmas camps and summer camps, and we're going to work with your coach, involve him in the process. It's going to be a cooperative program. So if the ski team decides to work actively with college programs, you'd have some great synergy, and instead of merely being passive and going like, okay, let me know when you're coming back type of situation. And we've had some good, they had a uni team for 2 years, which Peter Lang led, which was pretty successful. It took US ski team guys and supported them and provided projects for them. And that was a short-lived, but a really good experiment.
And now a message from On Location. What are you doing next summer? How about an unforgettable trip to the Olympic Games Paris 2024? Let us plan your perfect trip to watch the world's best athletes from premium seats with exclusive access to hospitality lounges in the stadium, along with tailored accommodation, tours, and more. Visit hospitalitytravelpackages.paris2024.org for more info. Although I want to get to you, because I know you have some ideas on this. We talked about that, like the relationship between the US ski team and colleges. And it's funny for anyone who was reading Ski Racing Media articles in the spring of 2020, remembers that this topic got really contentious. It was craziness in the American ski racing world for a couple of weeks. And there was, you know, Bryce Bennett wrote an article defending the US ski team, and people were heaping blame on the US ski team, and it was wild. So if people want to go back, I think those are probably in the archives, and you can kind of get an idea for the conversation that was happening around this relationship between the US ski team and college. Does the US ski team support kids going to college? I also, although you mentioned to me when we talked the other day about double dipping, is it double dipping for a US ski team athlete to go to college and still be on the US ski team?
Before moving to that, I think it's also can be instructive to look at other sports and how that's managed with the eligibility and the, you know, the standard eligibility of starting that eligibility clocks running 1 year after graduation. And while that is the way the rules and the way that pipeline operates to the pros, you still will have some truly exceptional athletes that come straight out of high school and go in the NBA draft or declare for the NFL draft. And I think there's some rules around, you know, around the NFL, NBA, who can do that and when they can do it and those kinds of things. So, you know, while those sports really utilize the colleges directly as part of the pathway to the pros, there are still those exceptional athletes that come along that go directly in and bypass that part of it. So I'm not sure that eliminating that or saying, you know, that the national team should say, look, when you're out of high school, you should go to college and then work through college and get to the, you know, get to the pros in skiing, that there are still going to be those athletes who are extraordinary who choose that pathway and that's available to them. But I do think that idea of double dipping in the, you know, in that space, and that was something that was just introduced to me in a conversation this spring that I had with a parent and a ski industry professional, and called it that. And you know, and looking at it objectively, you have to say, well, yeah, there is a certain element of that, right? There are limited resources available. The national team has resources. The colleges have resources. There's limited spots on each of those rosters. And for an athlete that is then taking both of those spots, it's a little bit the best of both worlds and really an advantage, but they're consuming those resources from both places and effectively then eliminating an opportunity for another athlete. And I still haven't got my head completely around that, but you know, I had to listen to that and say, you know, there's a certain amount of truth to that.
Yeah. I wanted to be accurate. You weren't the one that brought it up. It was that you had heard or someone had mentioned this idea to you. And I guess it's an idea to think about. And it's just part of this whole process of the relationship with the U.S. ski team, with college skiing. Pete, you mentioned the university team.
It's a little bit like an athlete competing for the University of Colorado and Coach Prime, and at the same time having a contract and playing for the Broncos, right?
Yeah.
Of course, that doesn't happen, but that is analogous to what's happening with some of our athletes.
Yeah, it is a funny example, but I guess the ski world is unique. But yeah, it's yeah. And when you think about it that way, it really is kind of funny. And people are skiing for the world on the World Cup and for university teams. But Pete, you mentioned the university team, which was the U.S. ski team got funding for, I don't know, five athletes, the five supposed best athletes, American athletes in the NCAA to get supplemental training. Was it, I don't know who knows the most about this here, but that seemed like an awesome idea. Like that seemed like what the D team should be.
I thought it
just disappeared.
Was a great concept. And yeah, I thought it worked really well. Brian McLaughlin's one of the guys who was on that program and now he's, you know, made the top 30 in one run at Solden. It was a really great program. And it was a proactive approach by the ski team to put a uniform and some resources out there into the college circuit to inject some direct support and to, you know, develop relationships with coaches and other athletes and, us getting to see how the ski team worked and their resources and the ski team getting to see how colleges worked and the hard work everyone's doing there. So, that was a great thing. And I do want to mention, you know, you mentioned the 20s and a lot of contentious. And I think it's true with me and Aldo have been on both sides of criticizing and, you know, sort of being devil's advocate for the ski team. But we've always done it only for the reason of supporting the athletes. So I think we're the biggest supporters of the U.S. ski team. While we may also criticize it, we've always been there for the athletes and trying to find the best for them.
Yeah.
I just want to jump in on that whole 2020 snarl too. I think it's actually really great to be able to look back on that and see how far we've come, because I think there's a lot more respect back and forth from both sides. And certainly since then, sort of college skiers have literally blown through and, you know, established themselves. So that's not in question. So as painful as that was, I think it's also, you know, helpful to look back and realize how far we've come. There's something. Yeah, go ahead.
No, that I just wanted to say that's a great point. But if you have something else to say, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, with the uni team, my understanding was that it was strictly a funding thing. There was funding in it for 2 years with the understanding that then that would be assumed by the NGB, and it wasn't. And maybe the NGB is, there was a misunderstanding there or something, but I think it was strictly a funding thing. The great thing about the uni team was by giving those athletes national team status, they had access to the equipment, which is a huge, huge hurdle for college students. If you don't have that national team designation, you just can't get the same equipment that a national team athlete can have. So that was in itself a big bonus of that program.
That is a really good point. Like that, I've had so many struggles trying to find skis, and you know, certain companies, they'll just break a lot and you have to get, you can't ski on broken skis if you want to win races. I mean, it's been done, but the roll equipment plays, I think some people understand how big a deal it is on whether you're skiing on the stiffer ski or not the stiffer ski. If you're a good skier in college, it'll be 0.5 of a second. So that's huge. And, you know, I've heard that some NGBs, like maybe it's the Swiss team or the Austrian team, that they have someone who's on the fringe of making it, they'll say, we're not going to give you any resources, but we're just going to put you on the website as an official named member so that the company will give you skis. So I think if, you know, if that's any model to look at, supporting skiers in college could simply be putting their name on the official team. I want to talk about the viability of a path through college. But before we get there, I want to talk about PG years. Let's try to do this chronologically. And Aldo, I know that you've thought a lot about this with your club, and you know, what your thoughts are there on is a PG year worth the expense?
Yeah. And this goes back, all the way to when I was, part of the national team staff and operating as the Alpine development director and hitting up our development team at the time. And Peter knows this because, oftentimes when we'd have an athlete that made that nomination criteria, we would actually encourage them to matriculate with their class and go to school. It wasn't to the depth that they were competing with that school as is happening now in some cases, but particularly taking advantage of schools that are on the quarter system like, Dartmouth, and DU being two of the principal ones. And Peter was always very open to having those athletes there and allowing them to do some of their conditioning activity with the team and integrate with the team and you know, opening that door to them being part of that college community. And we would then work with those athletes in terms of their goals, in terms of their preparation for the season, and help facilitate that, recognizing that there was going to be, you know, some shifting in goals that had to take place depending on when they needed to peak, their important competitions, qualification for world juniors, and so on. And, you know, the reason that we were supportive of that was for exactly the social reasons that both Edith and Peter brought up, you know, to be able to get on and you know, have that, you know, begin their college education and even have that perhaps interrupted along the way, because it was very difficult to be a full-time college student and have a full-time schedule as an athlete, but be able to begin that process and then maybe in you know, 5 or 6 years, reach that graduation where some of their peers might have reached it in 4 years. But from a club standpoint, you know, we encourage our athletes to matriculate, to move, you know, to college, to move on. And we try the best we can to prepare them to do that. Those that have the aspirations to ski in college or to make the step to the national team and not take those years that are disruptive to their socialization, to their education. And that are also, you know, the most expensive years of ski racing for an athlete who's trying to pursue that kind of schedule. So, you know, there's an awful lot of that takes place. It's actually now, I think, you know, in the last, I would say 10 years, become even more encouraged by the college coaches themselves to, you know, have that athlete take that postgraduate year or two, or even in some cases three, so that they come to the team and they are stronger, they're more mature, they're more experienced, they're more able to step into one of those roles and help the school be competitive. And you know, that's one of the reasons where I'm very supportive or advocating for one of these ways of reducing that pressure for the athletes to take those PG years, making it more a part of the pipeline. And I think if that were to take place, then the colleges really insert themselves directly into the athlete development pipeline, and are more impactful to that, you know, to those groups of skiers that are moving through the system that haven't maybe had that, you know, those exceptional performances early, like a LeBron James or someone else, to move directly into the NBA and become a competitive player, but are able to continue to develop and to utilize those great resources that the colleges and universities provide.
Yeah. And I guess that brings me to beautifully right into this next question, which is, well, actually, first of all, I do want to say, it is interesting when you look at it financially, it makes sense to skip that cost of an extra PG year if you can find a good school to ski for or find a spot at a school. I've talked to parents and kids before looking for advice, and there's people who, it's no question, like you can't afford to do three PG years. You got to go to college. But for other skiers, they're like, I have the resources to do three PG years. Why not do it? And I think that there's, you see a lot of athletes go backwards in PG years when you don't have something to do. And you, all three of you have talked about the social maturing that happens in college and just having something else to do and so many other aspects that enrich your life beyond skiing, but ultimately give back. But anyway, to continue on our chronological path here, you mentioned developing in college and that college coaches can help young athletes develop. The question that always comes up is the course setting, the soft snow that happens in the West, the flat hills that sometimes come up at different venues, are those conducive to development, and are they hurdles that can be overcome?
I would say, you know, certainly, you know, in the East,
we'll get to you next, Edie.
So yeah, in the East, you know, we race, you know, we had a carnival at Burke this year following, I think, a NORAM race. We race at Whiteface, Stowe, you know, we race on some of the best venues, and the snow is frankly really, you know, we get a lot of natural injection. So course setting is pretty good. Although I've seen NORAM races where they're setting straight 30 meter GSs and, you know, just not challenging courses. It's tough to compare to the World Cups. Those courses are just a whole nother story, but I think it's pretty good. It certainly, I'm always, you know, pushing for tougher sets and more challenging courses. That's just my nature. But I think it's pretty good in the East. In the West, yeah, they have some real challenges with soft snow. But I haven't, you know, been out there and seen it myself. But
yeah, Edie.
Yeah, I think, you know, that comes up a lot. Again, I feel like it's, not having been to Western carnivals, it sounds like it's more of an issue in the West than in the East, where there are some very challenging hills and sets. I think, though, the real, you know, what eats into a college racer's development is the prep. You know, you don't have as much of that early season prep, so you're not going to be ready for those November NORAMs. And, you know, if you're a junior, you're not going to qualify for the World Juniors because you didn't get to the early NORAMs and get your spot and all that stuff. And that's, again, where the national team cooperation could really help. And, you know, the entire ski universe could help, is finding a way to get these kids some off-season prep, because they're limited in their timing, the time they have available. They're limited also because they can't officially train as a team in the off-season. To to abide by NCAA rules. So that's where I think the college skiers really take the hit. The other thing is every NCAA racer I have interviewed, even the most successful ones, are like, this is hard. This is really, really hard to manage all this stuff. It's not for everyone. It's if you want to go to college, that's part of your, you know, life plan, then they say the earlier the better. But it may not be for everyone. And you have to know that going in, that it you know, there's no one telling you this is what you have to do to make it work. You have to kind of find your own path. And, you know, that's difficult. That said, you're juggling so many things that the development might take longer. But when you come out the other side, you are tough as nails and have and can deal with so much more than a kid who has just been ski racing, ski racing, ski racing. So it's trade-offs. And yes, it's not the ideal path. It'll take a little long. It's not the ideal path for the fastest development, but it goes the distance, I think.
Yeah, just an interesting thing. I've seen some interviews and some articles where they're interviewing athletes about the pressure of, you know, Laurent Saint-Germain winning a world championship, and so many of them mentioned that the most nervous they've ever been was in their college race, where they were skiing for the team and they had to finish their run, and that, you know, they say, oh, the pressure of a World Cup. Yeah. But I really learned how to deal with this in college, because I just felt so much pressure to perform at the championships and for the team.
That's a great point. Like it prepares you for the pressure, but also it prepares you to be a good teammate. Like being in college, it's nice. It was kind of like, you need to grow up, you need to be mature, you need to learn how to have responsibility, how to be a teammate. You know, there's so many skills, and you have to know that there's life outside of skiing. So in that way, I'm definitely a proponent of it. But we're getting near our end. We've got about 10 minutes left. I saw you unmute, Aldo. I don't know if you had a thought there.
No, just a final thought on the course setting and hill preparation. My sense is that's improved, I think, over the last, 5 or 10 years. And that was part of the initiative with the uni team as well, was doing that hill preparation and so on. But we also know that not all Europa Cups have perfect conditions or are run on hard snow. And there's a lot of variability there. So I personally don't see that as a weakness of the college system. I'm a little bit curious with the elimination of hiking in FIS races, if that may tend to lead collegiate slalom setting to be a little bit more, sort of conducive to finishing. But I guess that remains to be seen.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was wondering the same thing. In college racing, people hike because you need points for your team. So even if you're 30th, you're getting points from your team and you're 10 seconds out. But that's a really good point. I'm really bummed about that rule change. Does anyone know anything about that rule change and why it came about?
I'm not sure how it's going to play out in slalom. You know, we've had it in GS. But still, you know, it's particularly, say, at the NCAA championships, if you back off, you know, it's so competitive, 17 athletes. If you back off, you know, more than 5%, you'll go from first to last. And last doesn't help you a whole lot. So you still, you know, the pressure's there. You've got to, as my original college coach said, boys, you know, ski fast, don't fall. You know, you've still got to go for it. Because if you don't, you'll end up so far back that you'll score 2 points, and it's not going to help.
Well, that's ski racing, isn't it? Go fast, don't fall.
Yeah. That was Herman Muckenschnabel, who was the Dartmouth coach when I first went there.
I'm sad that we'll never get to see Robbie Kelly doing his Madonna di Campiglio, whatever that was, 30-second hike. That was all time. We don't get that anymore. Sad.
That's what made me the most sad. Yeah. It might have been Schladming, but regardless, it was one of the greatest moments. Everyone loved that. Okay, well, we're wrapping up, but I do want to, so let's say that this rule change got support from college coaches. What would be the steps? This is actually interesting, because I'm part of this development subcommittee with Aldo, and this health of sport working group. So I'm starting to see how rules get tinkered with and passed in US Ski and Snowboard. Would this be a US Ski and Snowboard rule or NCAA rule or a FIS rule? Like, what's the process look like in terms of?
It would be a rule that would initiate as a proposal in the NCAA Ski Committee, which is a small committee made up of four or five coaches and maybe one or two administrators. And then it might have to go be reviewed at various levels of, you know, NCAA rules bodies. But generally, you know, they support what the committees make. To give the rule a chance of being accepted, I think it really needs a strong push from U.S. Skiing to support it and say, this is important to us. And it's important for us to develop a working relationship, collaborative relationship. Because I think most of the college coaches, particularly the ones who are under pressure to really, you know, win races, are they're kind of, well, you know, it really doesn't. They might accept it, they might not, but they're not. They don't really see a reason to make a big change. So, but if there's a strong push from U.S. Skiing to say this is really important to us, we're gonna back it. And maybe they have some conversations with people at NCAA at a high level to you know, grease the wheels and put some pressure on and educate, that's the best chance. And also getting some parents, supporters, coaches who are, you know, educated, not just ranting, to support this in a logical way to the college coaches and say, this is really important to me and you ought to consider it. So it's going to take some politicking.
Gotcha.
Understood. Yeah. It's been interesting that, there's been a series of conversations that U.S. Ski and Snowboard and a working group there have had with clubs and academy programs around the country over the course of the fall and as we're moving into winter. And there's been overwhelming support from the club community, from the academy community, you know, to really visit this rule and to look at it. And so I think the conversation has been developing. I think, to the extent that conversation could be supported by U.S. Ski and Snowboard, by the clubs and academies themselves, and have that dialogue with the college coaches. And I think really the advantage to the colleges, again, is, you know, that's something that's been debated for, you know, for decades, right? What role do the colleges play in athlete development? And by reducing the eligibility of the older athletes into the system, it really puts the colleges squarely into the development discussion and makes them an integral part of the pipeline. So I think there is value to everyone in the community of moving in this direction. To the individuals themselves, you know, as Edie explained so well, I mean, it's finding their own pathway and pursuing what's important for the individual athletes and their families. For the clubs and academies to not necessarily even be trying to run these expensive PG programs, because even as expensive as they are for the athletes to participate in, they're extraordinarily expensive to the clubs and academies to actually fund and operate. And so there's a benefit to the clubs if we're not asked to be operating in that part of the pipeline, and then ultimately to the colleges themselves by really being integral to the development process as they are in our major professional sports.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, all great points. So we're at the end here, and I guess I'll just kind of go in a little semicircle and ask each of you to give me your final thoughts. Three sentences. If it's maybe it's an idea that hasn't come up yet, but you want people to think about it, or maybe it's just an idea that you want to harp on, or whatever it is, I'll give you each a couple seconds to kind of leave us with a last thought. So we'll start with you, Pete.
Okay. Well, I just thought you mentioned to tell some stories, and one that's particularly relevant at this time is AJ Guinness, who struggled off and on, and I think he skied one, maybe two carnivals for us. But he came back to school after a serious injury, didn't know what he was going to do. And I sat down with him and I just said, look, we're just going to take the year. And I have one goal for you. I want you to get healthy and confident. And that's it. And we're not going to push. We're not going to worry about results. We're just going to put you in the race when you're ready. And that was, you know, that's where I had the luxury of taking a long-term development perspective, no pressure, what's right for the athlete. And he ended up winning some races and going to the World Cup and eventually, you know, getting him back where he is now. So that's just a great story of, taking a step back, being patient and doing the right thing for the athlete. And it works out.
Yeah. Edie?
I guess I'd go back to that comment about the double dipping. And I think it's sort of indicative of where we need to get in our approach is not thinking of college developed this kid or the national team developed this kid. To, like, encourage everyone to take less ownership of who's developing a talent and more have that mentality of they're all our athletes. And so if a kid is on the national team, but taking the college resources for this, well, that's great. Cause now there's more resources somewhere else, you know, that he's not taking from the national team. So if the more we work together and see talent as, you know, US talent, the better off we'll all be in the closer we'll get to that goal of keeping more kids in. I mean, it's all about keeping more kids in the sport longer. So we know what we've got.
Yeah, I love that idea. I like the idea of being in the U.S. system, not as a binary thing with a jacket or not a jacket. Aldo?
Yeah, I think we really owe kudos to U.S. Ski and Snowboard and the national team. I don't think in the sort of the entire history that I'm personally aware of in terms of support for athletes that are outside of the direct system and making access to, you know, whether it is training camps, whether it is to qualify for World Cup starts and so forth. I think the openness that the ski team is exhibiting today is, throughout the history of ski racing in the United States has never been better. So that should be recognized that U.S. Ski and Snowboard has done a lot and is doing a lot.
I'm glad you said that. This is an area where they've really, I think, made big improvements. And I think it started with Tiger, and I think Sophie's still, keen to hearing about college as a viable pathway. Well, guys, like, I could talk with you all day about this stuff, and there's a million more things to talk about. I could do a whole episode on Division III skiing, but we don't have time. So we'll say bye for now. Pete Dodge, Edie Morgan, and Aldo Radamus, thank you for visiting Arc City.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Pete Dodge, Aldo Radamus, and Edie Morgan, welcome back to Arc City for a little update. There have been some new developments, I guess, on this story. We recorded, want to say about 2 months ago. And so now as I was getting ready to post it, I got a couple emails from you guys like, hey, let's update the folks before this gets posted. So Aldo, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, well, and I think everybody already by this point knows the fantastic news of Ryder Sarshad winning a gold medal at the World Junior Championships. And I think that's really a testament to how the collegiate system can work to the benefit of an individual. And it really is a credit, I think, also to U.S. Ski and Snowboard, where, you know, fast skiing is rewarded by the opportunity. And then, you know, obviously Ryder himself being ready to go and having had the kind of performance just a couple weeks ahead of that to give him a seat position to be able to compete successfully. So to me, that's a real positive sign that the system works. It works on all sides, on the athlete, the college supporting his continued development, and U.S. Ski and Snowboard being there to reward fast skiing with opportunity.
Yeah. So he skis for the Buffs for Colorado, and I think he won a college race before World Juniors, getting him some lower fist points, and then he did whatever he needed to do on the NORAM circuit to qualify for a spot at World Juniors, and then he went there and took the gold. It was an awesome run. It was really cool to watch. Edie, do you have any kind of updates or things that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, no, it's kind of more of the same. You know, we're pretty far into the college season now in the East. We just had the fifth of six carnivals, and it's just cool to see, you know, the new athletes kind of emerging. A lot of them come in, you know, sometimes they think that it's a step down going to NCAA. Maybe they had higher aspirations, and then they see the level of competition, and you see them a little bit shell-shocked and then start rising, you know, through the ranks and getting some good scores in there. You see people coming, you know, from the World Cup on the women's side, especially filtering down and kind of rediscovering the love of the sport and the camaraderie and everything. And it just, I think it's interesting to see that now that kids, I think, have, especially, you know, last year I was at a college race when Laurence Saint-Germain won the world championships, and, you know, everyone knew her story as a college skier. And this year was at another carnival when Ryder Sarchet wins the world juniors. And it just gives that little ray of hope to the college kids that wasn't maybe there before, that I think really is now. And it, to me, it's just really healthy. It's good to see.
I think there's more hope than there's ever been. Pete, talking to you earlier, you were saying, you know, a couple of guys from who were on the edge of making the D team, so very fast skiers, but also young and a little inexperienced perhaps, showed up at the college circuit, the Eastern College circuit this year, and they're barely making NCAA championships. And you're just saying that shows the level of skiing that we have in the college circuit right now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're generating pretty much now, making progress towards minimum penalties at all the races. It's been interesting. We started the year in the East with penalties that were a little bit high, but just because everyone's been churning their points over, a lot of guys mixing it up, that we're generating minimum penalties with big depth. And a lot of those young guys I know that have come in, they'll be, if not next year or in 2 years, you know, they'll be at the NCAAs and they'll be the type of guys who are shooting for championships. And so I think the system works well. And just, I think the real point, as always, the key with the U.S. team and everything else is it's just three-way communication all the way around. You know, the U.S. team, the college program coaches, and the athletes, you know, just have a really clear communication and get the sense that we're all in this, we're all in this for the same thing. And, you know, we're going to cooperate, work together, and, you know, just always ask what's the best thing for them right now. You know, staying home and racing, winning some carnivals, getting some minimum penalties, or, you know, going on that European trip and or whatever, you know, I think that's the key. And if when people are talking and communicating and there isn't a lot of, you know, unsaid stuff going on in the background, it's a great system.
Definitely. So,
you know, working with several athletes in our club program, you know, we're kind of at that level where they're, you know, they're, one of their goals is to make the step to the national team and continue to progress and become a successful World Cup skier. And at the same time, they're looking at the opportunities that might be available to them in college. And universally, the message they get when they speak with coaches is, well, why don't you take a year or take a couple years as a postgraduate athlete, come back stronger, get your points under 30 if they're not already there, you know, that kind of messaging. And I personally advocate those athletes moving right into, you know, the opportunity that's there in front of them. I don't suggest that our athletes take postgraduate years. I think that it's socially disruptive. It's very expensive for the families. And, you know, and the likelihood for success is always, you know, somewhat small, right, to be able to move and make those kind of steps. So, you know, I'm always advocating that our athletes move into that next step. And yeah, sure, there may be some athletes that are at that level that are able to move, you know, directly into being competitive at Europa Cup or World Cup level, and probably won't make that step to college. But those athletes are few and far between. And I think for the vast majority of the athletes leading their high school years, whether at an academy or a club, I'd like to see them have that opportunity to move into college racing and continue their development in that way.
Yeah, you know, I agree with Aldo there, and I, not to be contrary to what I said about some D team level skiers, you know, struggling a bit, but you know, they can, but I say this, if they go to college at that point, they can develop. You know, there aren't many 16 or 17, 18 year olds who are minimum point skiers. So I think by going to college and having that time to develop and a little bit more freedom to develop, like say these guys in a couple of years, maybe one year in college, they'll figure it out and they'll be, you know, scoring those minimum penalties. And then once you're at that level, you know, then you're poised to move on in a couple of years with the experience and the rankings and, you know, a chance to compete and win races. So I think, yeah. You know, I would agree with that. I think make that change, realize you're not going to move into the college team and win NCAA championships the first year as a freshman, because you're not 24 years old.
Yeah.
But you're, you know, a couple of years, then you'll be there.
Exactly. I'll give you the last word, Edie.
I guess just, you know, we're all college here. It is not the only path, but it is definitely a viable path. And it's the most economic, I think. It's the one that uses our resources best, leverages them best, because the top colleges have amazing facilities and they're right now funding a lot of great skiers to stay in the sport longer. And I think that's what it's all got to be about, whether it's a national team or the college system. We're just trying to keep more good kids doing the sport longer and to see what comes out in the end.
Exactly. Love it. Well, thank you all for revisiting Arc City.
All right. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks, Jimmy.
It is time to say goodbye. The end of the season is approaching, but there will be more episodes before that happens. Until then, don't forget to work on your ankle flexion, enjoy the extra sunlight, and send it in your championship races. I'm Jimmy Krupka, and thank you for visiting Arc City.